Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest in the OIES podcast series. My name is James Henderson. I'm chairman of the gas program at OIES. And I just want to date stamp today's podcast. It is Friday, the 11th of November, and we're recording this in the morning. And with me today to discuss the ongoing impact of the Russia-Ukraine war on European and global gas markets, I have my usual companions, Mike Fullwood and Jack Sharples, who are both fellows at the Institute. Welcome to you both. Mike, let me come to you first and ask you about gas prices, if I may. There's been some interesting movements in the European price. Certainly the spot price has fallen dramatically, as noted in the press, although the 1 month ahead, I think, is still somewhat higher. Could you talk us through the pricing dynamics over the past couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, the general trend, as you rightly say, and even in the month ahead, has sort of stabilised a little bit as we move into the December quotes in November. But they're obviously way lower than they were back in August, September, October, as they sort of came off. Obviously, the underlying trend there is, yeah, we've seen demand come away, and Jack will talk about that. And we've seen a lot of LNG continuing to come into Europe. And November, there's still lots of LNG looking to get in and some sitting outside waiting to get in. And so that's had obviously a lot of downward pressure on prices. So the month-ahead price for December is, as you said, quite a bit higher than the day-ahead spot price in the market, because we got this LNG backed up. We're still seeing flows at sort of maximum levels out of the UK, with LNG struggling to get into the UK, flows into Europe. The December quotes, interestingly, for NBP, TTF, are now much closer together. So there appears to be some sort of expectation that there might not be maximum flows down the interconnectors, but we're not seeing that yet. The LNG price into Northwest Europe is still well below the TTF and now the NBP quotes, reflecting the backing up of the LNG. And obviously, we've seen this risk premium, which you had for a lot of the year, sort of a fear of Russia flows being curtailed. That risk premium now is much lower. When you're flowing 65 million a day, the risk of losing it is not as great as if you're flowing 350 million a day. So I think that risk premium has come off a lot. But as we'll talk about, it all depends on this winter and sort of what happens next summer.
And so can you just give us some absolute price levels? I mean, what is NBP and TTF at the moment, and what's the difference between the spot and the month ahead?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the sort of month ahead, I'll use dollars a million BTU, then the month ahead is at 32, 33 for TTF, 30 for NBP, and the LNG price is about 23. The day ahead TTF is about $20, and the day ahead NBP is less than 10. So you can see there's still a huge differential. NBP, TTF, and NBP actually went down at one stage a couple of weeks ago to $4 or $5, which, you know, is kind of a shades of 2019, 2020.
Indeed. And just talking about the LNG then, I mean, we're literally talking about ships waiting offshore, are we, to deliver, or else being diverted elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, there's talks of, is it 30, 40, 50 cargoes sort of waiting off the English Channel in the Atlantic, deciding where to go. A couple of cargo has been diverted away from the UK. I think for the moment they've gone to European markets. But the Asian markets too are a little bit struggling to take some cargoes, because they've had mild weather there as well. And their regas tanks are pretty well at high storage levels. They're also waiting for the cold weather to arrive to start sort of emptying. It wouldn't take that long to run down the storage tanks and get more LNG in, but we're not seeing it yet. So there's a little bit struggling to sort of find a home. And we've also had some tankers waiting off offshore Freeport in the States, waiting for that to sort of reopen. But they've not filed all their paperwork yet. So there's a lot of sort of interruption in the market from normal service.
Okay, well, look, Jack, let me come to you then and talk a little bit about what's going on with demand in Europe in the short term. I mean, you obviously look at the supply side, but I mean, total supply effectively equals demand. So what's been happening there in the last month or so?
Well, I think what's interesting is that throughout the year as a whole, we've seen monthly demand throughout 2022 gradually falling as a percentage of demand in that same month averaged for the last 5 years. When we get to October, European demand, so as you say, effectively supply, so production, imports and net storage withdrawals combined, got to about 74% of the average for the last five winters. And when we move into the first week of November, when traditionally it's getting colder and demand is ticking up, European demand was about 71% of the average for the past five winters. Now, clearly, this is a combination of factors. We've got unseasonably mild weather, but even overlaid on top of that, that's, you know, seen a reduced demand, gas demand for space heating. We've also seen conservative consumer behavior, people waiting to turn their gas-fired central heating on, and of course, industrial demand being curbed by high prices. So it's really a combination of factors at present. But the question is, of course, how long that unseasonably mild weather lasts.
Okay, well, we'll come back to demand at the end. But let's talk a little bit about supply. Just remind us what's going on with Russian supply at the moment.
So, of course, thanks to everything thanks to supply from various routes being curtailed, the flow of Russian gas to Europe now, pipeline-wise, is restricted to two routes. It's the transit via Ukraine, and it's the deliveries to southeastern Europe via Turkish Stream and Turkey, which I measure on the Turkey-Bulgaria border. Now, the total flow averaged about 67 million cubic meters per day in the first half of October. But then it fell to the low 60s in the second half of the month and then averaged just 53 million cubic meters a day in the first week of November. So I think the interesting point here is that that decline is quite unusual for the time of year when we would normally expect temperature-driven gas demand to start to rise. It's also interesting to unpick a little bit of where that decline has happened. Out of that 15 million cubic meters per day decline, about two thirds of that is due to smaller transit flows via Ukraine. And then we can unpick the reason for that. It's the differential between physical and commercial flows is being reported by the Ukrainian TSO, GTSOU, on their border with Slovakia. And that differential between commercial and physical flows went from virtually zero in mid-October to around 10 million cubic meters per day by the end of the month. So that's indicative of backhaul or virtual reverse flows on Ukraine's western borders. So in other words, gas is being imported from Europe into Ukraine. That could be a mixture of storage injections or just increased Ukrainian consumption. So that's one element. Now, by contrast, the decline in flows into Southeast Europe via Turkish Stream, the decline in flows from Turkey to Bulgaria has been matched by a decline in flows onwards from Bulgaria to Serbia and on from Serbia to Hungary. In the second half of October, Hungary maintained its storage injections but was importing more across its border from Slovakia, so was possibly taking advantage of declining spot prices and not taking quite as much under its long-term contract with Gazprom. By contrast, in early November, Hungary's imports and storage injections have both dropped. We're moving towards the start, I would say, of net storage withdrawals. So in both cases, it rather seems that winter is closing in.
And in terms of those two routes, I'm guessing that the one at risk over the winter is probably Ukraine in terms of, you know, another cutoff. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely so. I think if we consider that... The Hungarian government has quite a positive relationship with Russia regarding its gas supplies. They signed a new supply contract earlier in the summer. Clearly, Serbia is considered something of a Russian ally in the Balkan region. I think there would be a certain reluctance to engineer any scenario that involved supplies to those two countries being cut off. By contrast, I think... the supplies via Ukraine are really the last of the Russian supplies to the broader European market, if we consider that Southeast Europe is a little bit sort of ring-fenced, let's say. And given, obviously, the ongoing Russian invasion in Ukraine, you would have to say that that is the route that's most at risk. Now, of course, the question is who loses if those flows are cut off? And overwhelmingly, that is Slovakia and Austria as the countries that receive their net Russian gas imports via that route. If that were to be cut off, I think we would see a ripple effect in hub prices as those countries start to try and import more across their borders. And of course, most obviously, we would see that ripple into the German trading hub Europe prices.
Okay. Let's take a skip through the other supply sources. Talk to us briefly about Norwegian flows.
So the Norwegian flows, we can sort of analytically divide them really between what Norway sends to the EU and what Norway sends to the UK. What Norway sends to the EU has been pretty close to its full capacity of around 250 million cubic meters per day throughout the year. Now, that in addition to that, the Baltic Pipe was officially launched on the 1st of October, but which was obviously before our previous podcast. But for the first few weeks of its operation, Denmark actually sent Poland gas that it had sourced from Germany. The connection with Norway, so Baltic Pipe proper, only began on the 1st of November, so 11 days ago. Now, what we've seen since then, given that the Baltic Pipe is a spur from one of the main Norwegian pipes to Germany, Europipe 2, is that Baltic Pipe has been flowing at about 6 million cubic meters a day, which is about 2.2 BCM per year to Poland. At the same time, Norwegian supplies to Germany have been down by about 4 million cubic meters per day, about 1.5 BCM. Sort of annual equivalent. So the project has brought a small net gain in Norwegian supplies to the EU. Now, by contrast, Norwegian flows to the UK remain at their summer levels. So the Langeled pipeline is only flowing at about two-thirds of its capacity in early November. And that reflects some of what Mike was saying about how the UK basically is backed up with gas at the moment. And with the onward interconnectors to continental Europe at full capacity, the UK really isn't yet in need of greater volumes. So from my perspective, looking ahead, the key question is what happens when the weather gets colder and UK gas demand rises? Will we see those Norwegian flows start to increase?
Okay. And what about Azerbaijan and North Africa, often talked about as well, as in terms of pipeline flows to Europe?
Yeah, I would say less in the way of dramatic developments. The exports from Azerbaijan via TAP remain at full capacity, as they have been all summer through into the autumn. A recent development, obviously, is the launch of the Greece-Bulgaria interconnector, which is allowing physically TAP supply along with LNG imported Greece into Greece to reach Bulgaria. In North Africa, the picture is decidedly mixed. Algerian supplies to Spain were stable in the first half of October at around 28 million cubic meters per day, but then subsequently fell to about 16 to 18 and have remained at that level. And that hasn't been offset by higher flows to Italy. Instead, the Algerian flows to Italy fell by about 12 million cubic meters per day in late October. And Algeria's LNG exports only rose very slightly in October compared to September. So we do have to question whether something is going on with Algeria's gas domestic gas balance, production relative to domestic demand, and whether Algeria has sufficient gas to bring its pipeline exports back to anywhere near the full capacity of those pipelines in the near term. But at present, the dynamic would suggest not.
Okay, Jack, thanks, Jack. So that's the pipeline flows then. Talk to us a little bit about LNG send-out. Mike's given us a picture of ships waiting offshore because there's not enough demand. But so what's actually happening with send-out then from the regas terminals?
Well, I think just in the last week or so, we are starting to see the beginnings of what you might call a winter uptick, which, as send-out goes up, obviously that, draws LNG out of some of the tanks, frees up space for more imports. So we could see some of those ships that Mike's talking about loitering offshore coming in when they can get slots. EU plus UK LNG send out averaged about 375 million cubic meters per day in October. And since the 3rd of November, that has risen above 400 million cubic meters per day. So clearly we are seeing now a little bit more gas demand in Europe, a bit more consumption of that. That's also being reflected in some of the rising day ahead prices, as Mike has discussed. So I think this is, we're moving from a situation where the LNG cargoes waiting offshore were effectively floating storage and moving towards a situation where winter is really starting to begin.
Okay, well, That's supply then, and we've spoken about demand being down. Let's move on to our favourite topic of storage. I presume that given the supply-demand balance we've been talking about, storage injections have continued during October and even into November. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. So the October injections, net injections of 6.3 BCM is actually a new record and completely smashed the previous record of 4.6 BCM. So that's meant that the net injection between the 1st of April and the 1st of November in 2022 reached 71.6 BCM, which is 0.1 BCM higher than the previous record, which we set in 2018 as we tried to replenish stocks in the aftermath from the beast from the east. Now, for Europe to reach record summer storage injections in the supply-constrained market conditions that we've seen in recent months is really somewhat remarkable. In terms of the total stocks, European storage stocks reached 99.5 BCM on the 7th of November, which meant that a further 0.5 BCM had been injected during that first week of the month. Now, for comparison, in 9 of the previous 10 years, that first week of November saw either net storage withdrawals or no storage movement at all. So, of course, the big question now is we're watching and waiting to see how much longer those net injections will be maintained. And I would suggest that when we see a switch to net withdrawals, we can say that winter has really begun.
Okay, well, then let's talk about withdrawals then and the kind of the winter scenario. I know you've been thinking about, how we should be, contemplating storage stocks, withdrawals during the winter and kind of what levels we kind of need to get to before the next injection season to make sure we're okay next year as well. Talk us through your thinking on stocks and where we might go during the winter.
So the logic of it, I would hope, is rather straightforward. If we start from the assumption that we want to have European storage stocks back at 99 BCM by the 1st of November 2023, so that's to match what we had on the 1st of November this year, we can then assess how we might get there. Now, obviously, a big chunk of that is the summer injections. So to estimate or to put together a scenario as to what might be available for injection in summer 23, I began from the assumption that supply from non-Russian sources and demand in summer 23 is the same as summer 22, and that Russian pipeline supply remains at the present level, so it doesn't rebound. Now, if you take all of that together and say that storage is the balancing element, I would estimate that under that scenario, there might be about 53 BCM available for storage injections. So, of course, if you take your target of 99 and you subtract the 53 that you think might be available for storage injections during the summer, it means that you need to finish the coming winter with about 46 BCM in storage to give ourselves a good chance of getting stocks back to that target level. So if you assume that storage withdrawals in the coming winter must be limited to 53 BCM, and that non-Russian supply is the same as the past winter, 21-22, and that Russian pipeline supplies remain at the present level, the balancing element becomes demand. And to reach that target of having 46 BCM still in storage at the end of the coming winter, I would estimate that European demand between November and March must be restricted to about 85% of the winter demand in the same period for the previous 5 winters.
Okay, and so if that is the case, then that's obviously positive. But how does that compare? How does that 53 BCM of storage withdrawals compare to what we've seen historically in a kind of mild winter or a cold winter?
Well, I think from a European perspective, it's rather a toss of a coin at the moment. It could go either way. 4 of the last 7 winters have been relatively benign, in which we've seen storage withdrawals of between 45 and 53 BCM. But 3 of the past 7 winters have been much colder, and we've seen withdrawals of between 66 and 73 BCM. So this does seem to be partly weather-related here in Europe, but also something Mike wrote about extensively at the time, Q1 2021, when it was very cold in Northeast Asia, and lots of LNG was pulled away from Europe to Asia, and so Europe drew more heavily on its storage stocks. And as Mike said at the time, European storage effectively balanced the global LNG market. So this is very much a weather-related issue, but it's not just weather in Europe, it's weather across the Northern Hemisphere.
Okay, and so, all right, we seem to have a fighting chance in terms of history. What about the current trends? What's European demand doing at the moment? You mentioned it was down, but I mean, you know, are we on track for that 85% of winter demand in the previous 5 winters?
Well, I think I'm going to retreat into the refuge of most gas analysts and say it all depends on the weather, really. As I mentioned earlier, European demand in the first week of November was about 71% of the average for the past 5 winters. So clearly we are on track in that regard, but we have been the beneficiaries of a very mild winter, or a very mild autumn, rather, to say, before winter begins. We've seen also conservative consumer behaviour. So anecdotally, I know plenty of people who still haven't switched on their heating, that they're waiting just a little bit longer. We've also been the beneficiaries of China's zero COVID policy as well, restricting Chinese demand for LNG, so freeing up some supplies for Europe. And we've seen industrial demand being curbed by high prices as well in recent months. Now, of course, the curbing of industrial demand may continue, but the question of weather-related gas demand for space heating will be significantly affected by temperatures here in Europe, and that's something we simply can't predict. So if the weather is mild, we'll stay on track. If it's very cold, we could blow past our targets.
Okay, I mean, obviously there's some other caveats there. I mean, you know, you've assumed that Russian supply stays the same. We've discussed that, you know, the Ukrainian line could be cut off. And obviously we've assumed that the LNG supply, as well as other pipeline supply, is the same next year as this. And I guess that brings me to you, Mike, in terms of, you know, that 53 BCM of supply to Europe next year is clearly going to be heavily dependent on the availability of LNG and also the demand for that LNG in other markets. Let's just start with the supply side. I mean, what's the LNG supply outlook looking like for summer 23?
Yeah, thanks, Jan. I think we're sort of, as we've discussed in some of our presentations to other people, probably the more optimistic end of the how much supply might, additional supply might come on next year. I think there's not much brand new equipment or terminals coming on. I mean, Coral FLNG is waiting to load, so that's not going to do much this year, and we'll probably ramp up a little bit next year. We could see the Congo terminal come on. That's a very, very small one. Senegal, probably end of the year. Tango in Indonesia, it's probably end of the year. But there's not much new coming on. But we are getting sort of a bounce back, or we think, from the levels in this year compared to the levels might be next year. I mean, Freeport is the big elephant in the room. That doesn't look like it might come on until maybe right at the back end of this year. So the growth in Freeport being back on could be almost 10 billion cubic metres compared to what it was this year. Calcasieu Pass is another US one, started in sort of February, March, and ramped up actually reasonably quickly to close to its sort of capacity. So there is still some growth there, because we only really had sort of half, two-thirds of a year of the sort of full volume. So that's the two big areas of growth. Then obviously got Norway, which really only started back up in May and has quickly wrapped up to, it's more than full capacity, more than nameplate capacity again. So that's all the positive sides. Prelude appears to be back on, but that's really sort of underperformed its nameplate really since it started. So a little bit coming from there. So overall, I think we're more at the optimistic end in terms of what LNG supply growth there might be. We're sort of in the mid 30 BCMs, 30, 35 BCM growth. I've seen other growth. The IEA talked about a 20 BCM growth in their recent statement by Fatih Birol. I think they're missing some of the turnaround in Norway, and they think they're assuming Freeport comes back on this year, so the growth next year. So I think they're a bit under underestimate there. I saw a Potent presentation the other day. They're a 20 million tonnes per annum increase, which is 27, 28 BCM. So on the supply side, we're quite bullish on that. Other people, a little bit less so. You're turning to demand outside Europe, because Jack sort of wrapped up the European demand pretty well. Then it seems likely that China's gone down so much this year, there's going to be some rebound back next year, especially if there's not so many COVID lockdowns. Or a little bit of a pickup maybe in Central South America. I mean, Argentina, Brazil, Chile are all well down this year. So it's a little bit of rebound back there as some new CCGTs come on. Continued growth in the Asian countries. So of this 30 BCM plus of increased supply, it's possible that the rest of the world could possibly take all of that if China bounces back strongly, but possibly only up to about 20 BCM. Sort of outside Europe. That leaves a little bit for Europe to take in sort of next summer, which will sort of help. I mean, currently, the average 2022, Europe's been taking in, on average, about 13.5 BCM a month. And it's currently at that rate. So it's feasible we might get another BCM a month sort of downhill with the following wind if the demand doesn't pick up too much elsewhere. A little bit more LNG we should get into Europe, unless there's a curtailment of supply, supplies less, or a big rebound in demand elsewhere.
Okay, so that's reasonably positive. I mean, it makes Jack's assumption of the same amount of LNG for Europe next year sound, if anything, somewhat conservative. I mean, I guess it depends on weather and activity in Northeast Asia, but not a bad assumption from Jack then.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, I think we might squeak a little bit more out. I think the problem is, as we've written before, is that the real issue of next year is Germany and Central Europe. They're the ones who are really suffering from the lack of Russian gas. So if Ukraine was cut off, that would be even worse. So I think, yes, there'll be a bit more LNG coming in there, but you know, some of the LNG coming into the market won't necessarily be going to those markets. So the storage situation could get very tight in Germany and Austria, Czech Republic and Slovakia, for example.
Having said that, I mean, of course, they are building a lot more receiving terminals, aren't they? We've got a lot of FSRUs coming up online in Germany. So I guess they would be expecting to take more LNG next summer.
Yes, I mean, they could start taking more LNG from right the end of this year and a little bit in the winter. The Germans do seem to keep changing the names of these terminals, so it's quite difficult for Jack and I to keep track of them sometimes. But there is a thought that we might see a couple come on in Q1, possibly three, and then others phase throughout the year. So, but there's still uncertainty on that. We had thought that if that starts to take LNG away from other parts of the world, some of the LNG could get taken away from the UK, in which the UK would export less. So even if, let's say, next year Germany took 20 BCM of LNG, that would not necessarily be a net 20 BCM gain for the European market, or the EU even, because the UK would take less and export less. But if this is where the kind of supply situation kicks in, is plenty of supply coming on next year, then the UK could still import and export at similar volumes as today. So the UK could become sort of the swing market in terms of the taking any available supply, LNG supply that might turn up.
Okay, and as we just come to the end of this podcast, then let's think a little bit about next winter and where we start. I mean, from what Jack's been saying, you know, in a mild winter, perhaps storage levels get down to 40 to 45 BCM, maybe 46 BCM by the end of this winter. And it sounds, from what you're saying, Mike, is it that then we could see that being refilled to 99 before the end of next summer, so ahead of next winter. So then that's a relatively benign scenario. I guess in a cold winter, from what Jack was saying, you know, those storage levels could get down to below 30, so somewhere in the mid-20s, at which point it becomes more difficult to refill during the summer. Sounds like there could be a little bit more LNG, but I mean, you know, I guess, again, the questions around next winter are now perhaps the more important ones even than this winter. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I think so. I think the target end March storage balance, if that's 45, 50 BCM, then getting back to the to this year's level should be achievable with a little bit more LNG. But if we've sort of emptied out another 15, 20 BCM, then we really are struggling. And you know, you could obviously see it being made even worse by the Ukraine route being shut off. Maybe Putin's just waiting for the weather to get cold in Europe, and then you know, there'll be a pretext to turn the taps off through Ukraine. Then this kicking the can down the street, it does hit a brick wall sometime next summer if the Ukraine route's turned off. So that's the big risk.
I mean, I guess the other point is that your 35 presumably assumes no unforeseen outages, which I know you can't forecast. So, I mean, it basically also assumes that LNG flows as well as it can next summer.
Yeah, I mean, the issues in 2021, if we go back to last year, is there's a huge amount of backlog of maintenance, which is why we lost supply, because it couldn't take place in COVID. But there's been quite a big catch-up in maintenance in 21 and to some extent in 22. So other than an issue like a Freeport issue where there's a real... you know, a real technical problem as opposed to extended maintenance, then that's the real risk, is something else like that happens. It doesn't happen that much in the LNG industry. We've just seen Norway and Freeport in the last 2 to 3 years happen. It doesn't happen that often, but obviously you can get those issues. And the other one in some countries like Trinidad and Nigeria is the feed gas problem. Nothing wrong with the plant. They just don't have enough gas to put into it. But Trinidad is beginning to pick up now. They've started new production. Yeah, there's always that risk, and that would tighten the market even further. But on the other hand, Europe showing an ability to pay the high prices and attract LNG away from elsewhere, notably Pakistan, India and Bangladesh. So those poor people have been suffering from power cuts, whereas we've been taking the LNG.
Okay, well, that's probably a topic for another podcast, I think, but we'll certainly come on to that issue, because I think the rest of the world and the impact of the high prices on particularly Southeast Asia is definitely worth discussion. But for now, thank you very much, Mike, for your input. Thank you very much, Jack, for your analysis as well. Sounds like the situation is not as dire as it might have been, but we still continue to wait on the weather and the start of winter. So we'll come back to this in a couple of weeks, perhaps when winter has actually started, and see how the situation has changed. But for the time being, thanks to you both. Thanks to everyone for listening. Please take care of yourselves, and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.